Now, in college towns around the Midwest and West Coast, stadiums will be silent. Playing fields will be empty. The Big Ten and Pac-12, two of the nation's largest college football and sports conferences, made it official that they would be postponing, if not canceling, fall competitions. The Big 12, SEC, the Southeastern Conference, and the ACC, or Atlantic Coast Conference, so far are planning to go forward with their seasons. The effects of these decisions have and continue to reverberate among fans and coaches and athletes and their parents and also politicians. And to discuss this and how it looks going forward for winter and spring sports, even beyond, our guest is Karen Weaver. She's currently assistant clinical professor in the LeBeau College of Business at Drexel University, though next month she's joining the faculty at the Graduate School at the University of Pennsylvania. Karen has been a Division I and III national championship head coach and director of athletics. Karen, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, great to be with you.
We won't dance around it. You wrote in a recent piece for Forbes after the Big Ten made its decision about the season, final earlier this week. You wrote, "It's about damn time." So remind us what pushed you to this point.
Well, I think I wrote the article because I really wanted to take a look at the leadership gaffes that I thought that folks just really missed the windows, missed the moment, if you will, from the month of May on. And I actually quoted the five stages of denial for grief. And I talked about denial and I talked about bargaining and I talked about finally getting to acceptance with the idea. And I feel like that's the exact stages that college athletics leaders, presidents, conference commissioners finally said, we just have to accept this is our reality.
Okay, so was it denial, though, or was it hope and optimism that we would somehow figure out how to pull this off?
Both. It was absolutely both, because coaches, and having been one and been an athletics director, we are eternally optimistic people. We believe with just a little bit more hard work, a little bit more focus, a little bit more commitment, we can get anything done. And it is a wildly great attribute to have, except in the middle of a pandemic with a virus you don't understand.
So how do you think colleges, conferences, even the NCAA could have handled it differently instead of the denial and optimism combo?
I really think that we missed the opportunity back in May to start seriously thinking about what plan B would be if we couldn't have football. Everything that I read, every person that I talked to who was in that sphere was only operating on the moment-to-moment idea that we would start small, we would bring the athletes back in small pods, we would keep them socially distanced. If we had any athletes that tested positive, we would immediately quarantine them. But then beyond that, they didn't really have a plan for when they had massive outbreaks. And we saw that a lot in the Big Ten. Rutgers had a massive outbreak. And so all of a sudden you went from quarantining maybe one or two players to 25 or 30 players. And there wasn't a plan for that. And in the middle of all of that, one of the things that I thought was, it almost felt like the train had gotten going down the tracks and there was no putting the brakes on it. I think that was a missed opportunity.
Now, there are differences among the conferences. The Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC say they don't see things the same way as the other two Big Two conferences. And the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, was interviewed earlier this week on the Dan Patrick Show and talked about some of the protective measures that they're taking, which he says go beyond guidelines released by the NCAA. Let's take a listen.
We're looking at third-party testing opportunities so that we can have independence, common reporting, common testing. A lot of work to achieve that, but certainly a part of making football viable. And our medical advisory group has said, yes, we can continue to go forward. Were that advice to change, certainly would be a stopping point. But the indicators are we can right now do what we're doing in a healthy way, and we're going to continue to consider that central issue, health, as we move forward, we hope, towards competition with no assurances that that actually will take place.
I mean, Sankey's saying we're following the rules. So at what level here, Karen, does there need to be leadership that you think would be offering them some different decision-making choices there?
So this pandemic has really given us an opportunity to look at the way big time college sports works. And for many years now, we've argued that the Power Five conferences, of which those three conferences plus the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are a part of, have operated in lockstep with their goals and interests in mind to the detriment of the rest of Division One. And clearly, in this situation, they are not. So one of the things that Commissioner Sankey said there was he was talking about testing results and testing data being made available to the other conference schools. The key indicator in all of this has been the ability to get testing results back in a timely fashion that makes a difference in the way you structure and plan your practices and your day. In the recent weeks, an average turnaround for a test that's not commanded by a doctor, you're not in a hospital and you need to have one right there, has been anywhere from 3 to 5 days. Some outliers have been longer. But we know that in the structure of a group organization like a football team, which is a large group, it's well over 150 people at practice. If it takes even one full day for somebody's results to come back, the possibility of infecting other people within that 100 or 200 athlete or coaching area goes up substantially. So the idea that we can do football without having a very quick, and when I say quick, like it results in 15 minutes to 60 minutes, the ability to pull somebody and isolate them out almost immediately from practice is a key indicator in all this. And I think that's where college football needs to get to rather than trying to dance around some of the other issues that they've faced.
We're talking with Karen Weaver, who's an assistant clinical professor at Drexel University now. She's been a college athlete and a college coach, and we're talking about sports and students in this pandemic. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What are you thinking about as you see different conferences make different decisions? Maybe you are a college student, or you played college ball, or participated in a non-football sport in college. How are you thinking about the decisions that these conferences are making right now in a pandemic? 800-642-1234. Karen, we have to talk about the money. I mean, with football, even just football, we're talking about millions and millions of dollars. We've heard the University of Wisconsin-Madison throw around the number $100 million in lost revenue if they don't have a season this year. I mean, what are the financial stakes here? They're real.
They are very real, and they are huge. And it just goes to show you how much of the football revenue drives these conferences. March Madness can't come close to this kind of money. Generally, I would say in these conferences, football revenue is about 5 times that of March Madness basketball money. You also add in the incredible investment that schools in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have made recently in facility enhancements, and therefore taking on facility debt. And I took a quick look in the top 15 schools in the country that have the most amount of athletics related debt. The Big Ten holds 5 of those slots in the top 15. And looking at a school like your next door neighbor, Minnesota, for example, they have a $262 million debt that's just related to building facilities, of which they've got to figure out between $16 and $20 million a year in order to pay that. So that is very much like trying to make sure you pay your mortgage every month, because that's a fixed cost that is not going away. And Michigan, for example, has almost $290 million in debt, of which they've got to fund almost $18 million a year. So this is not an insignificant part of this issue either.
How do we think about the financial situation, though, of other sports beyond football, non-revenue generating sports like field hockey?
Well, you're talking about a sport that goes after my heart, because I was a field hockey coach for a long time. This is a pretty tough place. I was thinking about this today. The field hockey practice in the Big Ten started Monday, and they probably had a really good day of practice on Monday. And then Tuesday, the announcement came out to the Big Ten that they were going to postpone their fall sports. I can't imagine what it would have been like to have been a head coach at that point in time, to have to turn and look at your athletes and say, our season's over with and we only played one day. Let's hope for the spring. And to be an athlete in that situation is incredibly difficult, because that's a key part of your identity. You know, you view yourself throughout your entire high school career as having the skills to move on to play at the highest level you can, which is in this country outside of the Olympics is Division I. So to have that taken away from you and have and not knowing the certainty of which you will play again is very, very unnerving.
Yeah. And those sports that don't necessarily generate most of the revenue, they still benefit from the revenue. So if the revenue isn't coming in, does that put those in jeopardy?
It does. You look at Stanford a few weeks ago, they had one of the largest, most successful, broad-based athletic programs in the country. They had 36 varsity sports. They consistently finished number one in the last 20 years in what's called the Director's Cup, which is the best broad-based, most successful athletics program in terms of winning percentage. They've turned out hundreds of Olympians over multiple decades. They dropped 11 sports in one day because they said, we can't sustain this anymore. And so if anything, that's a signal that athletic departments are looking at how broad can we really say we can afford, especially when all of this is tied up in facilities, in spending in football, in coaches' salaries, and then, of course, trying to figure out how to pay for everything else that goes into an athletic department.
Yeah. We're talking with Karen Weaver, and we're focusing on the state of college sports this fall amid this ongoing pandemic. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How are you thinking about the balance of not having much college sports to watch this fall with the precautions that need to be taken for the health and safety of players and coaches and their families? What do you think of the assessment of timing and whether conferences should all be on the same side here? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. Our conversation continues here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina, and we're talking about the postponement of college sports in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and not in the other three major conferences. Our guest, Karen Weaver, has been a Division I and Division III national championship head coach, a director of athletics. As a college athlete, she was an All-American field hockey goalkeeper and member of the national training squad for the 1980 U.S. Olympic team. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you an athlete affected by this decision? We want to hear from you, offer your perspective. Maybe you're a parent or you know someone who is in college right now dealing with the athletic uncertainty. Join the conversation. Share with us at 800-642-1234. And we've got Scott from Oregon who is ready to talk with us. Hi, Scott.
Good afternoon. I have a couple questions for your guest. It seems like these decisions are being made at a level that's distant from some of the people that are closest to it. A lot of players talk about all the preparation they've done and how much they want to play. That's one. And two, a lot of coaches think that they'll be able to actually keep their environment safer for their student athletes if there's a season versus just canceling and letting those folks to their own devices. I'm just curious what Dr. Weaver might have to say about the voice of players and coaches in addition to some of the other populations that are making these decisions.
Thanks for the question, Scott. Karen Weaver, what do you think about taking coaches and players' opinions into account when making these decisions to keep people safe?
Well, I think for too long we've left the players out of the conversation. And in fact, that has really become to the forefront with a number of issues. First, we've had the College Football Parents 24/7 group, which organized around the fact that they didn't know what was going on as far as taking care of their sons and whether their sons would be safe to come back to campus. So that was a group. That's a group of about 2,400 parents that have been worked together on a Facebook group, and they've been actively advocating to know more about the health and safety modifications that have been made to make sure their sons can return to campus in a safe way. There have been activist groups within the conferences. So the Big Ten and the Pac-12 both have Athletes United organizations who said, no, we want a seat at the table. It is not okay for you to make these decisions outside of including us. And what the groups that are the conferences at these tables would say, but we have an athlete representation mechanism. The problem is it is one or two athletes, and they're usually pushed off to the side when these kinds of decisions get made. And one of the things I argued in the article that you mentioned is it's time for the next 2 months, if you don't have football and the athletic directors don't have sports to oversee and the athletes aren't playing, they're just training, it is a perfect time to sit down and ask them, what does good medical care look like to you? What kinds of medical things should we be covering? Should we be offering lifetime insurance? Should we be covering graduate school in terms of education for you? What does racial justice look like to you? So it is a perfect window, a perfect moment to have the athletes and the people who run the Power Five, the big time program, sit down and say, okay, how can we make this so that this is more of a partnership rather than a dictatorship?
Something I heard Scott say when talking about student athletes saying they want to play, and that you acknowledged earlier in this idea of they've worked so hard to be here, now we're saying you can't play, is that not only is it a will thing, but it's a future career thing. I mean, student athletes in college don't make money. They set themselves up to make money as athletes later on. Or even if they're not on the pro track, they're going to college on these scholarships that depend on them playing. How do we address that?
So fortunately, most of the conferences have come out, and the NCAA has also reinforced it, that nobody can lose their athletic scholarship if they choose to step away because they don't feel safe under COVID-19, they have a pre-existing condition, or if their programs decide not to compete, the athletes also won't lose their scholarships. Now, remember, football players do get full scholarships, but the other sports you mentioned get partials. So you might have one athlete who's on a scholarship of a full tuition and another who might only get room and board. So these amounts vary, and there's still a financial piece of this for the parents and the families. But there has been a rapid acceleration and recognition that the athletes need to have access to all the normal things that they would have should they be in season. So they need access to the training rooms. They need access to their coaches. They need access to their academic support staff. They need care if they get sick. So all of those things which weren't built into the conference or the NCAA rules are quickly being adapted in this scenario.
Talking with Karen Weaver, who's assistant clinical professor at Drexel University, and also joining the faculty at the graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania next month. And we're talking about the state of college athletic competition right now in a pandemic. And we're taking your calls. Nancy from Adams wants to join in. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. What are you thinking about?
All the billions of dollars that the these universities, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, have in their endowment funds. And are they tapping into those to cover these expenses, or are they going to be just left sitting and they'll beg for more money added to the endowment funds?
Yeah, Nancy, thanks for that question. And Karen, you know, there are so many layers to college finances, but we do know that athletics bring in a lot of money.
They do, and they do a really good job of trying to endow, you know, coaching positions or athletic director positions or athletes like the quarterback or the wide receiver. But I actually took a look at what some of the sports endowment incomes were for various Big Ten schools. And remember, the endowments, there's the university endowment, and then there's the piece that's dedicated particularly to athletics. And those are two very separate things. So the most recent reporting shows that, for example, the University of Michigan, which we consider to be a highly successful, very visible program, gives back $6.5 million a year back into the athletics budget. Now, their athletics budget is well over $170, $180 million. So $6.5 million isn't a huge amount of money. Contrast that with the University of Iowa, which has $3 million in endowment income that goes back. Penn State has $6.5 million. But then the newest members of the Big Ten Conference, Rutgers only has $1.4 million that goes back into the athletic budget. Maryland has $1.1 million, and Nebraska did not report any, so we don't know what theirs is. So there's this wide range, even within the Big Ten, of how much they can rely on the endowment monies to supplement the athletic budget.
As we wrap up here, I want to talk about the potential for transfers, because there may be some students now in conferences that will not get to play, thinking about whether they can transfer to a school that is playing. I mean, is that a possibility, and how should we think about that?
It absolutely is a possibility. Now, whether there's room on the roster at the school you're looking at is another story. If they only keep three people at your position and you're number four, they may not be interested. But if you're a good quarterback and they needed a good quarterback, they might be very interested in having you. But here's the flip side. The flip side, and I'm speaking as a coach now, is you probably were recruiting that athlete from the time they were in ninth grade, maybe even earlier. So you have invested 3, 4, 5 years into your relationship with that athlete. And this is what unnerves coaches so much at this particular time, because they look at it going, because of this pandemic, I could lose this athlete because I understand why he wants to play. And so the idea of creating every possible opportunity to play in the spring becomes more and more important, because you want the players to stay with you and not leave, go chasing another opportunity somewhere else. It is a very tenuous time for the coach-athlete relationships on teams.
Hmm. Karen, we really appreciate everything that you've gone over, and certainly this story is not done. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Karen Weaver is assistant clinical professor in the LeBeau College of Business at Drexel University, though next month she will be joining the faculty at the graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania. And we talked with her today about big changes to college sports, particularly the Big Ten and Pac-12, who've decided to postpone all sports for the fall, unlike the other three major conferences when it comes to college athletics. This is Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network.